This week's Inside EVs podcast is brought to you by Electrify America, and we're so happy to be partnering with Electrify America until the end of the year. With Electrify America, you can drive your EV from coast to coast with more than 650 charging stations nationwide and new locations opening every week. Electrify America is bringing EV drivers the freedom they need. Whether you want to plan a weekend getaway, maybe you're off to see some friends or relatives, maybe it's a coast-to-coast road trip, you can ask our Kyle about how that's done using Electrify America charging stations. Well, you can rely on Electrify America's ultra-fast chargers to get you back on the road faster. So, where will you go charging on Electrify America? Let us know in the comments below. We'd love to hear what your plans are for this weekend, and tell us where you'll go next. And you can learn more at electrifyamerica.com.
Hello, and welcome to the Inside EVs podcast for October the 8th, 2021. This is episode number 79. Our top stories today: we drive the GMC Hummer EV, we drive the Tesla Model S Plaid, and we drive the Mazda MX-30, and much, much more. I'm Dominic Yoni, Inside EV's forum moderator and Inside EV's editor. Joining us today is the fastidious Tom Bologna, Inside EV's editor and host of the YouTube channel, State of Charge. Of course, Kyle Connor joins us from Out of Spec Studios. He also puts together scrumptiddlylicious videos for the Inside EV's YouTube channel. All right. And Martin is not with us today. He is on a secret special mission. We'll talk about it next week, maybe. I'm twiddling the knobs today, so if things are kind of a little wonky, it's okay. They'll get back to normal next week. So before we get going, I'd like to ask that you please subscribe to the show. If you're watching on YouTube, please hit that thumbs up button and ring that bell icon for notifications. If you're watching on Twitch, you can also ring that bell icon for notifications. And all right, so with that out of the way, welcome everybody. So let's, I guess, start with talk about this week. It's going to be pretty much all about talking about what we've been driving this week or what's in our driveways. So let's see. Let's start off big, I think. It's Tom. You got to go on a special trip this week. You got to drive the Hummer EV, right? You're driving it.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's been like first drive month for Kyle and I. We've just been all over the place driving all these really cool new EVs. And I got dealt a good hand with the Hummer EV. It was a small first drive event. It was at GM's Milford Proving Grounds. And we couldn't bring any cameras, any recording equipment, anything, because it was in a very sensitive area where there were other vehicles driving around us that GM obviously doesn't want captured on film. But GM did have GoPro set up in the Hummer EV and audio all set up so that we could they recorded it for us and provided us with the footage. We have a video up on our YouTube channel and also first drive impression article. So check that out if you haven't seen it yet. We had about a half an hour to do some on-road and off-road driving. We got to check out the all-wheel steering, the crab walk, which is really cool. We did some rock climbing. I got to check out the 18-camera ultra vision system that really is awesome. I mean, the first taste I got of these external cameras for off-roading was with the Rivian R1T. And if you watched the video and the article that I wrote, I praised it because it's so effective for off-roading. You can see the tires exactly where rocks are coming in. One of the biggest problem you have is slashing the sidewall of your tire off-roading.
Right.
And the cameras really help you. They're like a virtual spotter, so that as you're approaching, you know, tight spaces, you can see to the inch where the rocks aren't by the wheels. The Hummer EV takes it even one step further than what Rivian did. They have cameras on the inside and the outside of all four wheels, whereas Rivian just has them on the outside, and you can slash a tire on the inside also very just as easily. So it's a really cool camera system. And, you know, we didn't get to do an extreme off-roading adventure like I did with the Rivian, but we did some rock climbing. And just like the Rivian, one thing that it presses me so much is as you're climbing over these challenging situations, these big rocks. The electric vehicles, Rivian and both Rivian and Hummer EV, as you're climbing, they just feel so confident and they just gradually move forward without any rocking. You don't have to play with the friction brake and the accelerator. You don't have to get your revs up. There's no, you know, racing the engine. It just gradually moves forward like it's can't be stopped. And the Hummer EV actually uses a blended braking system. It's not all regen holding the vehicle back. They use, when you're in the off-road mode and you're climbing rocks, they use the friction brakes and regenerative braking. And it actually was pretty smooth. I could kind of feel the friction brakes grabbing in addition to the regen, and they still might be massaging that pedal feel a little bit, but it worked fine. Couldn't complain about that. The crab walk was so cool. It just feels so unnatural as you're driving and the vehicle is going this way back and forth down the road. It's I can't explain it yet. You know, if you get an opportunity, go to your local GMC dealer when these things are in stock and right. Just take one for a test drive, because it's just so cool. And it's not just like a stupid parlor trick. I could definitely see how you would use this to get out of trouble, both on-road and off-road. It would really help getting out of a tight parking spot, and on the street. So, I mean, a lot of people say, oh, you know, this is just, you know, it's kind of useless. It's really not. Driving it, I could see how you would really be helpful in tight turns and tight situations, both on-road and off-road. And then we did the Watts to Freedom, which is a launch control feature. And unfortunately, I couldn't drive for that section. That was out on GM's track. So they had a swap, and we had to have, I had a really great engineer in the vehicle with me, gave a great description as we did the drive. So definitely check out that video. And he had to drive for the launch control part of it, the Watts to Freedom. And the funny thing is, I knew it was going to be fast. I had seen the videos and everything, and I had just finished driving a 2021 Tesla Model S long range, not the Plaid, the long range, but it's still ridiculously quick. The Rivian R1T 0 to 60 in about 3 seconds, the Lucid Air 0 to 60 in around 3 seconds or so. So in the last 10 days, I had driven like three of the fastest EVs out there. And I can tell you, this felt faster. Now, I know it's not faster, but it felt faster. You see how I'm not playing there. It threw me back into my seat, and I felt like somebody had pressure on my chest holding me there. You know, it was like, and if you do watch the video, you see I'm laughing. You can't see I have a mask on. We all had to wear masks, but I'm like giggling like a school kid. And I didn't really realize I was laughing so much till I watched the video footage, and I'm like, I kind of look dumb there. I'm just giggling the whole time, but I couldn't help it. And I guess it's just that feeling you get. It's different than, I've driven the Taycan Turbo S, which launches like nuts. Like I said, the Model S, these cars press you back into your seat, but there's something different about being in this big truck high up in the air, you know, rumbling down the track. It just has a different physical feeling. And it's just so much fun. People are going to love this truck. I mean, I think everybody that gets one is going to set up a GoPro and just do this to their friends and just give their friends the footage. That alone it's worth, because the launch mode is the, you know, Watts to Freedom, WTF they called it, you know, and I'm sure we all know what they were thinking of when they named it that. That's like the best thing about this. It's just so much fun, and it should be all about fun. Kyle says that all the time. Don't buy a car if it doesn't put a smile on your face. I promise you, if you drive in the Hummer EV, if you're not giggling like I was, you will be smiling for certain.
Right. Hey, this is the part you were talking about earlier with the brake modulation. Oh no.
Yeah. Right here. Here's where we do it. It was a short, it was only about 50 feet of off-roading. They had these big rocks set up that we climbed over, and like I said, the cool thing about it, and I don't think it's unique to the Hummer EV, you know, it has it, you know, which is great, but it just moves forward. I've driven vehicles off-road, and you know, you have to be right there on the brake to make sure you're not rocking and rolling backwards, and you know, giving it, accelerating at the right time. But With the Hummer EV, like the Rivian R1T, you just keep your foot gradually on the accelerator and it just moves forward. It doesn't stop. It doesn't roll. It just, it's like it's inevitable. You're going to get to where you need to go just slowly and steadily.
I love everything about this. Just watching everyone in the car when you do WTF mode. And it's, this is real American freedom in a vehicle right here. But with EV, you know, we've had Ram TRX, we've had Ford Raptor, but we've never had, I would say, a really spicy up to 12 pickup truck that's electric. And this to me is like the craziest thing that will be on sale next year. This, it is next year, right?
This fall, actually.
This, I think the before the end of this year.
Oh, no way. That's soon. This is insane. Yeah.
And you see how tight that steering is?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Well, 10 degrees in the rear steer is a ton.
Yeah. That rear steering is like a godsend.
Yeah. It does the turning radius is 37 feet. And for a big truck like that, I mean, most like full-size pickup trucks are about 10 feet more, or somewhere around 47, 48 feet. So, you know, the turning radius was great. I mean, like this, another thing that I just love about electrification is we're getting all this cool tech that, like, you know, nobody put in the conventional vehicles. It's making everybody just rethink. Look at that. See how it moves sideways.
That's how, when I get one for a loan, I'm only driving it like this. And I'm making a video only crab walking.
So that's funny you say that, Kyle. I don't know if you watch my video, but at this point, I'm telling the GM engineer, I'm like, this is all I want to do is just for the rest of the course, I just want to crab walk.
Just crab because walk. That's the coolest thing.
It just feels weird. You want to like stop and like absorb what's happening because the vehicle shouldn't be sliding sideways unless you're spinning your tires and, you know, you're on a slippy surface and the whole vehicle is sliding, but it's not. You're going slow on dry pavement and the vehicle's going sideways as you drive. It's just a weird feeling.
I don't know if you're a boater, but it kind of looks like a boat with the bow thrusters at full speed. And this is interesting. You know, Tom, you said it before. Like I say, don't buy cars unless they put a smile on your face. They're emotional purchases. People like cool things. And the Germans don't get this, I don't think. And I think we have these American companies delivering. First off, my Tesla farts when I hit the little button on the wheel. Like, that's hilarious. This drives sideways on purpose. Like, we are living in the crazy world of fun. And who says transportation shouldn't be fun? I love this.
Absolutely. And even the name. It's like, you know, everybody loves Tesla for, you know, all the pop culture references they use, you know, to the movie Spaceballs and everything. And, you know, GM went out and, you know, big company, you know, conservative lawyers and all this stuff, and named the mode WTF. You know, now, you know,
that's how they got it past the lawyers. The lawyers don't know WTF. So they said, what's the freedom?
Exactly. Right. That I'm sure that what's the freedom came up after they had decided they want to name this WTF.
100%.
They probably then like had a competition. Oh, yeah. Like, okay, everyone submit what WTF is supposed to mean. And you get whoever gives us the one that we pick, you know, we'll give you a bonus or give you a day off or something 100%. Like that. But it's a good name. What's the freedom? It's you know, but nobody's going to say that. Everyone's going to say WTF mode. And when you put it in what's the freedom, the vehicle prepares for it. It lowers 2 inches. There's a big visual on the screen.
Wait, doesn't it play music and stuff?
It plays music.
Oh, really? What kind of music?
The driver's seat vibrates like with the feature that they use if you're the lane departure warning feature. You know, it vibrates to let you know
the vibration of the seat.
So it, you know, you get haptic feedback, you get visual feedback, you get audible feedback. It's like getting you all to go. You know, and then you just mash it. You're just, you know, thrown back into your seat. It's just, it's so much fun. Like I said, I'm sure this would not beat the Model S, a Lucid Air, maybe even not a Rivian, I don't know, in a quarter mile drag race. But it feels like it would. And that's all that matters. You know, it just feels great when you're driving it.
I think it'll take the Rivian.
It might. I don't know. I've driven both.
Right.
I don't know. I think the Rivian might have pulled better once you're moving. So I don't know. In a quarter mile, I really don't know. But I mean, this is 1,000 horsepower. Rivian has a little over 800 and has 1,200 pound feet of torque.
Did you get any axle shake at full throttle up front?
I couldn't feel it up front. No.
That's amazing. Because you know, like a Model X, for example, no matter what they've done to that car, if you launch it, it just goes on the front because the half shafts start to
bend. No, the rear, we had some wheel spin off the line. But the front felt fine to me. You see me just throwing back in my seat. I wish we didn't have the masks on because you'd see me just dying laughing.
So that was cool. Love it all. This is such a cool, I can't wait to drive one. This is so cool. It's so heavy. It's so insane. It's really, truly a super truck, I think.
9,046 pounds.
Well, you're going to win in
that's
any
the
fight,
curb that's weight, sure. Not the gross vehicle weight. You know, it's got over 200 kilowatt hour battery pack.
Right.
GM says it's going to be good for roughly 350 miles or something like that. So, right. I mean, obviously it hasn't been EPA range rated yet. But, you know, with the Ultium battery pack, it should charge pretty quickly. This will be the first vehicle that comes out with the Ultium battery pack. So, you know, the Cadillac Lyriq is going to be close second, but this will beat that out. And I tell you, people are going to love this vehicle. I can't wait till it goes down market and we can get some more affordable models coming out, because the first edition is $112,595 and it sold out, and everyone's going to love it. But then there's two or three more editions coming out, and not until, I don't think we're going to get the least expensive one until 2024 or late 2023. So it's going to be a while before the least expensive version comes out, but and I'm sure it won't be quite as powerful and everything, but it's still a great truck. People are going to love this.
I had a question in my mind, but so GM just had this big meeting the other day, a big showing off what they have, and they also announced that the Silverado EV is going to be coming out. It's going to be shown at CES this year, so I think it's the 5th of January, so we'll get to see what that looks like. And I think it's basically the Hummer EV architecture, right? It's going to have rear wheel steer, and it's going to have the glass roof or whatever, but that's fine. But I think they said 400 miles of range as well. So that's got to be 200 kilowatt hours of battery pack, right?
That would make sense. You know, I would suspect that it would be slightly more efficient than the Hummer EV. So it could have the same size battery pack and get squeeze out an extra 50 miles of range.
Right. It's got to be smaller somehow and lighter. So I think it gets its own custom chassis, and it's going to be a little different than it's some of the bespoke chassis or platform. It's not the same as the gas version of the Silverado. They're doing that with a lot of the vehicles. They also announced like the Blazer EV is coming, and the Equinox EV, which are like, you know, mass market, high volume production kind of vehicles. And they have those names. They're just recycling the names, though. They're going to be, you know, not stuffing a bunch of batteries into an Equinox, thankfully. And so I just wanted to mention that part.
About the Chevy, it's interesting that it doesn't seem like, and we'll find out more details, that they're going the same route as Ford with the F-150 Lightning, where Ford really tried to share as many components as they possibly could with the gas version that the Lightning has, to keep costs down. And right. And that's how they were able to bring the Lightning, the Pro model at least, with the smaller battery pack, to market at $39,900. That's ridiculous for a work truck. And yeah, it's not going to have tremendous range, but not every vehicle needs tremendous range. For work trucks, plenty of people will be able to live fine with the smaller range battery pack on the F-150 Lightning. So it's going to be interesting to see how GM does for work vehicles. So what's the base price going to be? Is it going to have a smaller pack, and see if they try to go after the same market?
Yeah, well, I mean, Ford uses the top hat, but the underneath is all new for the Lightning. I'm not sure if GM kind of was throwing shade their way, trying to say like their vehicle is going to be like, you know, all new, all EV from the ground up. But that's also what Ford is doing. They've just borrowed the other pieces from the existing lineup. So, you know, I'm like all in on Team Chevy as far as like their electric pickup truck. It's going to have the range and power and cool stuff like this rear wheel steering. But I'm worried about the price, because, you know, Ford really, you know, that was a great trick they pulled out to bring that $39,000, you know, price into effect for the base Ford Lightning. And hey, Tom, I'm not sure if...
Oh, I'm sorry, Dominic. It broke up on my end, so it sounded like there was a pause, and then it went over. Tom, your driving instructor was awesome. What was his name? Dan?
Yeah, you know what? I actually forget his name right now. You're putting me on the spot. I put it in our article because, I've, like, interviewed people from every company in the last week.
Was legit. I like him a lot. I want to have
exactly.
He's awesome.
Yeah, he was awesome, and there were so many comments about it, so I just let him talk. When we got in the truck and I started talking to him, before we went out, I could tell, and I'm like, do you want to really just roll with this? And he goes, just tell me to start and I'll just keep talking. I said, just give us as much information as you can. Just keep going. If I have any questions, I'll jump in. And he just was one after another, after another, after another. So I was just like, you just roll with it. Let me just enjoy this drive. And he was great. He was awesome.
So his name is Drew Mitchell.
Drew Mitchell, right. I was thinking Mitchell, but I didn't want to say that. But yeah.
Awesome guy. Love Drew. He made the video so great. Obviously, Tom, you made the video amazing. But
he did all the talking.
Drew really added to it. And I thought, I enjoyed listening to him. He speaks my language for sure. And definitely the kind of the guy you want to have working on this car.
So Doc Tall to ask a good question here. Why does the spare look like that in the bed? So it's like turned like in the same direction as the wheels in the truck.
Yeah. I didn't ask any questions about that. I noticed that too. I don't have an answer. It wasn't on all the trucks. They had it on the truck that I was driving, had the spare mounted like that on the rear. I don't have an answer. Maybe that's, the only place they could put it if you want a full mounted spare. I'm not sure.
Right. So this goes into production before the end of the year. And I guess, I don't know if have they said they're going to make deliveries before the end of the year?
That's what I thought.
Okay. That'd be great.
I'll get confirmation, but that was the impression I was under.
And we're probably going to, we call this a first drive, but I think there's going to be another proper first drive when they let us loose in the streets with it, right?
Absolutely. Very soon, from what I understand. This was just like a quick, I think GM just wanted to get some press and invited a small group of people just to do this 30-minute drive in a controlled environment at their testing facility. And like I said, no cameras, nothing was allowed.
Anthony C says another Hummer EV has been spotted charging at 140 kilowatts at 86% at EA, 99 kilowatt hours in 45 minutes.
Sign me up. That's what I need right there.
140 kilowatts at 86%. That's pretty good, right?
That's insane.
Yeah, that's
the only
awesome
thing that can match that is e-tron, but barely.
Okay.
Nothing else can charge that fast at that state of charge. But again, it always has to do relative to pack size.
Right.
Is it that crazy because it's got a huge pack?
Maybe I think it is.
But that's still, it sounds great.
That's the reason. It's got so much room. I mean, 85%, but they're still talking about.
Yeah, there's still plenty of buffer there.
40 kilowatt hours of,
Yeah, it just depends. Yeah. This is, I'm curious, Tom, do you know what the peak charging rate is on this thing?
They really didn't want to get into technical charging questions at this. So it's just what they've announced so far, it's going to get, up over 300 kilowatts.
I love everything about this. This is so cool. I just really hope people are respectful of the land they travel over in this thing, because you can cause some serious damage up in Colorado, especially in mud season with this, leave some ruts. It's so heavy. But at the end of the day, adventuring with an electric truck that can also put Tom back in the seat with the $100 bill challenge on the dash and he would fail. That's impressive.
Exactly. Well, I want to point out, we just showed a part of the video where they use the washer feature because these cameras are obviously going to get muddy, and at least the ones that are under the vehicle. So there's a washer feature where if you press the camera, it squirts water on it and cleans it. Now, one thing I will notice, you notice the sides of that camera are really scratched up and hazy.
Right.
So I'm wondering if some of the camera views were scratched. And that's because Drew told me that this vehicle has been used for extreme off-road use. This is this was one of the vehicles that they've been testing for hundreds and hundreds or thousands of miles of off-road use. So the camera lens was scratched a little. So that's something to keep an eye out on. If you're really doing a lot of off-roading, you might have to replace the camera every now and then, because if it gets scratched up, it's not useful. So that's something to keep an eye on.
I think it was that, I think he said it was at Moab a lot, doing a lot of stuff at Moab with it, right? Getting scratched up. But he said the underneath the vehicle, the cladding, I think he said it's made of steel.
Yeah, there's five distinct plates. It's a five piece plating system.
Okay.
And they're supposed to, I asked him about what type of steel, it's just, he didn't know the exact steel, but it was a high strength steel. And that's one of the things they talked to us about before we got in the vehicles that they were proud of, is that it's supposed to be like, you know, the toughest underbody, you know, armor that you can have. And then Drew was telling me, and I don't know if this was in the video or if it was edited out, because some of our drive, we were on areas that you could see other vehicles outside the glass. So GM edited that out before they even gave it to me.
Right.
And at one point he was talking about when he had it in Moab, where he was going over this big rock and the whole vehicle came down on a boulder, and he was convinced that he had broken. He goes, "All right, I finally did something to break this you know, steel cladding underneath." And then when they went out and checked it, he said there was a little dent, and he goes, if that's all that happened after the entire weight of the vehicle came down like 6 feet and landed on a rock, like he said, then nobody's going to break this. This is like indestructible.
Right on. So Kyle, you have any more questions about this?
No, I really can't wait to have a go. This is hilarious.
Right. Hey, what's the extract mode? You said that wasn't available, but it is raised up in off-road mode. How high up does it go?
So the extract mode adds another 6 inches what the off-road mode raises it. I think it was 4 inches. I'm sorry, I can't remember exactly. But the extract mode adds it that much more, and that was not activated. So what you're seeing there on the screen isn't as high as the suspension will go. Extract mode was something that I think they just kind of added recently. At least that's what they announced only a few months ago. It was like a new addition that, the Hummer EV is going to have this new extract mode. So that was not functioning on the vehicle when we got it. Much like when I drove the Rivian, the tank turn wasn't activated. And that's something Rivian had said that, we're still working on it. I kind of got the feeling that there's no rush for them to get the tank turn option working. But GM did say that the extract mode will be ready really soon, if not at the initial launch, really soon thereafter with a software update.
Right on. All right. So do we want to talk about something else? Let's see. Kyle, so you did drive the you did drive the Mercedes EQS earlier this week, and we can't talk about that yet, but
I can talk about it in 1 hour.
Right, in 1 hour we can, but that's after we're finished here. But you can, so go over to the Inside EVs website, and there should be a video story up about it with your video.
Yeah, you can just go back to our YouTube channel right after this podcast. If you hang out for 30 minutes to an hour, something like this, at noon Eastern today. So maybe 2 hours, sorry. Late. Am I mixed up in my
schedule? You're scheduling? In Colorado.
So. Yeah. 1 hour? I don't know. Doesn't matter. Going live later today, 2 hours.
At noon, right. It's 2 hours, right.
You can learn everything you ever wanted to know about driving the Mercedes EQS 580 on Inside EVs and 450 on Out of Spec Reviews.
Oh, there's two different versions.
Yes, because there's two different cars. Okay. But I gave the one you really want to watch is the Inside EVs one, because that's the one where I compiled all of my thoughts from 450 and everything from 580 into one concise video. And this is easier to watch. And then the Out of Spec Reviews video will be like, I take you on my whole first day of testing the car for the first time. So everything's new reactions to me in that video.
Right on. So you also drove the Tesla Model S Plaid for the first time.
Yes.
So last night, I was just preface this by saying that Tesla had its annual shareholder meeting, And we should give a little bit of news about that. There wasn't a whole lot of news coming out of it, but there was some kind of big news. They announced that they're going to move their headquarters to Austin, Texas, the state where they're not allowed to have stores somehow. I don't know how they didn't get, you know, hey,
magic.
Governor.
It's happening. We'll see. We'll see how this works.
Yeah, but you'd think you get that assurance beforehand. You know, just like, I mean, you have all the leverage, right?
Not anymore. You don't have any leverage.
Right. No, if you've already committed to it, I mean, they can do whatever they want. They cannot, you know, let you open it. So Tesla cannot. They have stores that you can go in and look at cars, right? But you cannot order them at the stores. You have to go home and do it on your computer.
They're providing thousands and thousands of good, high-paying jobs to the area.
Right.
And, you know, they're still not getting any love. So, but that's, you know, it's just strategic move by Tesla. And we'll see if it eventually turns out to be the right move. I think it was, but like you said, Dom, I would have expected them to get something first. You know, say, look, we're going to bring factories here. This is just the beginning. You know, 10 years from now, you know, we're going to be employing maybe tens of thousands of people in your state. You know, give us something, you know, but no, they got nothing. They didn't get any concession for moving into the state. Maybe tax breaks and stuff like that. But I mean,
our global editor, John Neff, reminds us that we need to watch the Motor One video of the EQS 2. So you can go over to Motor One. That's our sister.
That'll probably be a good site. One to watch, because Clint probably did a nice walk around overview of the car. Because we had the opportunity already to do this for Inside EVs, we pushed every button, pulled every lever in studio like 6 months ago. I focused just on the driving. So if you want a refresher of everything, then Motor One, then Inside EVs. That'll work.
Right. And Mr. Neff also has a Tesla Model 3 with the, and he's pressed the full self-driving beta button. And I'm not sure if he's got 100% score. So basically, you need 100% score in order to get, you know, invited to the first, you know, wave of this new wave of viewers to get actual full self-driving beta, which is supposed to be pretty incredible. We'll see. And that was supposed to be like last week. I think it was supposed to go out, but it's been delayed. Now it's 2 weeks. So I think tomorrow night is like the deadline. So if you have like 100 score by tomorrow, you get 10.2 full self-driving beta, whatever. Yeah. So I don't know if there's any other. Did you guys watch the shareholder meeting video?
Yep.
Okay. Any other news out of there that kind of struck you?
No, cool that the headquarters is moving to Texas. I think that's the big news of the whole thing for me personally.
Right.
It's at least the easiest to digest. Overall, thought it was a nice presentation. Elon looked happy, all good. Everyone's pumped. They were in Texas for the event. And I think they're on a roll. It's amazing how they predict Model Y to be the highest volume vehicle globally. This is surpassing Toyota Corolla. Model or F-150. They said no matter the vehicle, they predict Model X to sell more
Model Y
than anything. Oh yeah, Model Y. Sorry, Model Y. Yes,
right.
That's impressive.
Into Austin, Texas, when they make the Model Y, they're making like the front one big casting, the rear is one big casting. I guess the same will be for the Berlin factory. So I'm really curious what that does. You know, to just to tighten everything up. What do you call that?
Car's already really tight, to be honest. There's very little compliance in that car.
Right. I mean, how much torsional rigidity do you need?
You won't be able to feel the difference, I don't think. The car's already extremely stiff, like way too stiff, I think. So, yeah, I think it probably will make zero difference to the driving or ownership experience, but it is cooler that it will be less parts.
Right. And so at the meeting, they also went over a few targets over their timeline, a bit of it. So the big, you know, the overhead view of the timeline is really impressive. So Robin Denhold came on and she's the chair of the board since Elon was kicked out of it. And she mentioned that their 2030 target remains 20 million EVs. That's a year production, 20 million. That's like nuts. I don't think it's possible, but, you know, we'll see. And 1,500 gigawatt hours of batteries for storage besides that. And that's a lot. And we also got an update on the timeline. So the Model Y I think that's going to be the first vehicle they start building out of Austin, Texas. And the Cybertruck sounds like it's going to be delayed a bit. It's going to be, so, you know, everyone's beating it to market. Rivian beat it now. The Hummer EV is going to beat it. Ford Lightning is going to beat it because it's only going to come in the second half of next year. And then the full ramp up production is only in 2023. So this is, I'm not sure. They didn't give, GM hasn't given a timeline on the Silverado EV, but man, maybe it's going to be close for that one too. Actually, GM did mention they're going to build a new factory to build those electric pickup trucks at some point. So I'm not sure if that they're going to do the Hummer at the Factory Zero they have already up in Michigan, but they have a new factory coming up as well. They're going to, I don't know if they're going to transfer the Hummer part there, but definitely the pickup trucks, because pickup trucks are big. That's the biggest thing that GM sells, like, I think, right, by vehicle, by model, Silverados. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm looking for Kyle's confirmation.
Oh, I don't know sales numbers, but I see Silverados on every corner.
Right. Yeah, I was looking over their third quarter sales yesterday, and yeah, Silverado is really like a bright spot, you know, as far as the numbers. They're pretty dynamic. The numbers are up and down.
And truck, the new stuff's great. You get the new inline diesel, the inline six diesel. Great motor, great truck. Thing's awesome. Can't wait for it to be electric.
So tell us about this Model S Plaid there, Kyle.
Oh, haha, Plaid. Wow, I have been waiting to drive this car for a long time. I know I'm last to drive it, and my video will go up tomorrow on this car because today's EQS day. Tomorrow will be Plaid day, and then Mach-E GT day is Monday, right, Tom? We can talk about that, I think.
Monday, yeah. After Monday. I think 6 a.m. No, 9 a.m. Eastern.
9 a.m. So stay tuned for that, too, from both Tom and myself. It was great to see you at the event for Ford, by the way, Tom, and cool to see the Ford folks. We gave a special promise. We'd shout out Emma and Darren on the podcast. They listen in. So, hey, guys, thanks for listening. And, yeah, great event, great time. Can't tell you anything about Mach-E GT, but I can tell you about the Model S Plaid. There's a guy here in town who's a TikToker and also Snapchat stories and Instagram reels and like vertical video stuff and YouTube shorts he just got into. Okay. And I've heard of him. We've sort of conversed back and forth. I've like seen him drive by and like we wave, but you know, finally he just took delivery of his Plaid and he's like, would you like to drive it? And I said, absolutely, but I'm overseas. So as soon as I come back and I have a day, I would love to take your car. And that was yesterday. It was my first free day home here in Colorado. And
you get a day off and you go drive a car.
Yeah, he and I just swapped cars. He made videos with my Model 3. I took his Plaid. I got the better end of that deal, I'll tell you that much. And holy smokes, this thing is insane. I mean, it's crazy how fast it is. I've never experienced anything that accelerates as hard as this. I mean, Tom and I were in Lucid Air. I can make the comparison. That Lucid Air felt like half as fast as this car, to be honest. I don't think we had full power at a Lucid Air because this thing was spinning tires at 70 miles an hour trying to find traction. It was stupid. And that's the best way to describe this car. It's stupid in every possible way. Just the acceleration was crazy. Okay, so now I got that out of the way. Now let's talk about what everyone else will want to talk about. It's fast. Pretty. We get it.
70. The wheels are spinning at 70. Really?
There's dusty surface. But yeah, okay. You just hear R-r-r-r-r-r-r-r-r-r-r-r-r-r-r-r-r as it's trying to like transfer traction around. And the traction management system's awesome.
Right. Well, this is quicker though than the Lucid. The Lucid is fast or is quick.
No, but it's like not even in the same zip code. Like this.
Right. I mean, this is 9.9, is it?
Yeah, but I don't know if our Lucid had full power. They were being really cagey about not letting people into sprint mode. And then, like, our guy let us into sprint mode. And it felt like good, but it wasn't like, I mean, you can see it in the video. We explained it. It was like, that was all right. Like, it's fast. Right. But this was like, oh my God, this is crazy. Like, truly insane acceleration. Right. You just can't describe it.
Kyle, we also had four people in the Lucid. Anything.
Go ahead, Tom.
Sorry to talk over you. We also had four people in the Lucid Air, and you were probably driving this by yourself. That'll make some difference. I mean, not crazy, but that is worth noting that we were carrying around an extra 800 pounds or whatever. You know,
yeah, this is not a legitimate comparison in testing procedures if we want to go like this. But I'm just telling you, this car smokes anything I've ever been in, and I've been in some fast stuff, and it's crazy. So yeah, really insane. And I drove the Yoke for the first time. Tom, I know you've experienced this. And I've never commented, I think, publicly on my opinions on the Yoke because I wanted to experience it for the first time. And we won't focus on it for too long, but I think it boils down to I really actually wanted to like it. I think I would actually buy it if there was still an option between a circular steering wheel and a Yoke. But then I was struggling with this last night. I'm like, oh, I got back in my Model 3. I'm like, oh, this is nice. I can put my hands where I want.
Kyle, let me ask you a question because I drove it for a while also on the Model S long range I had. And I didn't feel comfortable on a long ride on the highway. It felt like my hands weren't like I got tired of holding
Tom,
it.
This car has autopilot. What are you doing with your hands on the wheel? Don't you know they drive themselves?
That's I forgot. You're right.
That's sarcasm. They don't drive themselves.
Stupid of me. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. How did you feel about, I don't know if you drove it long enough, but like I felt hours. Kind of fatigued holding it there. Like my hands didn't rest comfortably on it. And I don't know, maybe I'd get used to it.
Because I just drove it. I just held it like a normal wheel. And then anytime I wanted to turn, it was one finger on the top and I would push at the bottom. You'll see it in the video. Yeah. And this was the most comfortable way I found to just cruise around, not rip. So yeah, straight line acceleration, crazy, one trick pony, kind of. The owner I spoke to knows a little bit more about the car than I did, but he said, you know, I came back, I'm like, dude, this thing's really loud on the highway, like really loud. Okay. He's like, oh yeah, Tesla didn't enable the noise canceling yet. So like that's not programmed in to do this active noise canceling stuff. So I'd like to test it again once that's done.
It's going to have noise canceling? I didn't realize that. I thought it was supposed to be a lot quieter though.
Yeah, but it's quieter than my Model 3, but compared to other cars in this category, it's not that quiet. And you'll see it in the video. Like, you know, I took it on some smooth surfaces, some really rough surfaces, and I just thought, someone just said they confirmed that the Model 3 wheel and stocks can be swapped. And that's the thing. I think I wish I could just put the stocks on and maybe I would keep the Yoke thing. Although I kind of hate saying I would keep the Yoke thing. There's no benefit to the Yoke. I'll tell you that right now. Zero. It's just maybe not so annoying to live with once you get used to it. But why should you have to get used to a steering wheel? I don't know. But the turn signals were the worst part and the horn. And like, I was like turning the wipers on by accident sometimes. And I'm like, this just is so awkward.
Right. And that's frustrating for sure.
I was getting better at it at the end of like 3 hours. But like, this was just stupid. And this whole like predictive gear shifting thing didn't work for me at all.
Oh, really?
I had to override it every time. Because I was trying it in a parking lot and I put it on. I'm like, okay, now I literally can't go forwards. And the car is like, you're going forwards. I'm like, no, there's a thing there. Go back.
Did you put it in the park first? I think.
No, I did it all right.
Okay.
And that didn't happen to me. The predictive gearing worked fine for me. I had the same issue with you. As I'm turning the steering wheel, I was turning on the windshield wipers. They were flopping and it was just. It was just so weird. I got used to the blinkers pretty quickly.
Take your eyes off the road every time you touch the blinker.
The thing is, like you said, I love innovation. I love companies stepping out of the and trying things that are different. And I don't even knock Tesla for trying this, you know, and saying, hey, why does the wheel have to be round? Let's try this out. But they should give people the option to getting a round wheel or the Yoke. But after driving it, and I guess I needed to drive it more, I'll admit that, but I did drive it all afternoon. I was like, I would not want this at all. There's no benefit. Like Kyle just said, if there's a benefit, then sure. People say, oh, well, you could see the instrument cluster better. I never had a problem seeing the instrument cluster on any of my cars ever.
I mean,
I guess it depends on your height and how you set your steering wheel and so forth. But, I just don't see the benefit of it. Could I get used to it? I could get used to it, I think. I still think the horn is a problem because that, you know, sometimes you need your horn in an emergency situation. You need to really be – and it's just an instinct to
hit
your horn.
That's where the Yoke becomes a problem. Yeah. I noticed myself driving a bit more conservatively, like coming out of corners, because I'm like, oh, if it gets a little spicy, I'm not sure if I'm going to know where to put my hands.
Yeah.
Like, it's just awkward. And I was like reserved driving around this Yoke. And I'm like, can you physically drive the car with a Yoke and maybe get around then the answer is yes, 100%. I don't think it's going to stop you from going to the store. I just think it's going to decrease the safety level and the comfort level to the point where you're constantly thinking about it, at least for the first few thousand miles as you get used to it. And then some people, you know, maybe you just totally get used to it. I don't know that side of things. I don't own the car. But I'm thinking about it now, actually. So we'll see.
Yeah.
It's, so,
it's not better. That's what, you know, it's not better. And, you know, then what's the purpose if it's not better?
Right.
So go ahead, Dom.
All right. Okay. Real quick. So we had this story on Inside EVs last week. So Marcus Brownlee put out this tweet. And so he's had one since pretty much the launch. He's got the Plaid, you know, with the Plaid thing on the back, the actual Plaid, not the word Plaid, but the actual little Plaid symbol from the first wave of deliveries. So he's had his for some time, and you can, on our post, we have the original video, his original review, first impressions video. And he is, you know, pretty dubious about the yoke. He's not, you know, digging the whole deal like you were explaining, but he just put out this tweet. And so he says he's gotten completely used to the yoke, to the point where if given an option to switch to a normal wheel, he wouldn't take it, which is, you know, it kind of surprised me.
I wish he would elaborate and say why. Marquez,
and I watch his channel and I know him and I've been on his show and he's a great guy, but he's not really a driving enthusiast. And I mean that in the nicest possible way. Marquez is not going out drifting cars around or evaluating vehicles and safety scenarios every day. I don't think there's any benefit to the steering wheel personally. And yeah, maybe I'd get mine with the yoke and then swap it out with a normal circular wheel. But there are some, there's a lot more beyond the yoke that we need to talk about because we got to
move through. Yeah, let's do that.
So I'm a Model S owner previously. I owned a P100D. This is what I used to drive a few years ago. And that was my daily driver. I drove it all around the country, drove it everywhere, took it drag racing, everything like this. No, I have not officially reserved a Plaid yet. Coming from my previous ownership experience with the earlier version of this car, I thought it was a unique experience where I could see what Tesla's up to these days. And they've improved almost nothing except the acceleration. So the noise is quite loud. The ride is okay, and you can play around with the suspension. I don't like the Tesla presets, but they let you go in and adjust kind of the damping and then the sportiness or the handling. Like, I don't know exactly what it's adjusting. And then you get all this great suspension data and you can like play around with sliders. That was cool. Someone's asking about the quality of the car. Fine. Like the passenger door had some issue shutting, but this is typical Tesla. You just deal with it. The seat wasn't really bolted in correctly, but you just deal with it. It's a Tesla. Who cares? It's stupid fast. For me, that stuff, I've owned a few of these things and never really had major quality issues with them. Maybe some niggles that were fixed upon delivery, but yeah, I just think if you want a real well-built car, just go buy a Taycan. So I drove it up a back road. This is where I was most interested because I wanted to test thermal longevity. I wanted to test handling and braking. And I'll tell you right off the bat, the brakes were gone after corner two. You come flying into a corner and this is a heavy car and you build so much speed and you're, you know, full threshold braking into a corner on turn in. And then you're like, oh, there's not much pedal left there. And then second corner, you're like hitting the firewall with the brake pedal and you're not even in an ABS. And you're like, oh no. Braking system sucks beyond belief. They took the same braking system from like 2015 and then put it on this car. And somehow that's okay. What you need at least is pads, fluid, and stainless steel lines to help with the feel. That's at a minimum. If I bought one, day one, 100%. Day two, I'd go big brake kit. You don't need carbon ceramics. That's crazy because you'll burn those up if you drive the car hard enough, which I will. I've owned them on cars. And then it's like $20,000 to do just rotors. It's crazy. So you just need bigger brakes. Secondly, the handling situation was so surprising. This car does no torque vectoring at all. I don't know how they can say it on the website. Zero. It just spins inside tire, grabs traction control, and locks you down. It's also geared for like everyone who will buy a Plaid, which are like everyone in Silicon Valley or LA that's like done well on TikTok, right? And going to show it off to their friends. And so the car's tuned to be extremely safe. So in a straight line, gives you anything, everything it can. If you're coming out of a corner and mat the accelerator pedal, the car does nothing. It barely accelerates. It gives you maybe 5% torque, and G-Wagons do this too for rollover. And then as soon as you unwind the steering wheel and you get past 1 degree, boom! And then it just gives you everything. And this is so infuriating on a back road because you have to drive around this sort of technical limitation, which Model X has always had. We've always joked because we've taken Model X on track and Model X on the Dragon, and like you would always just get the car into a corner, get it straightened out as soon as possible, and then rock it. And you have to drive the Plaid like this, which is not natural and not fun. It was not fun at all in a back road. Was it faster than almost anything I took up the road? Yes, because I'm climbing up a straight hill and the speeds were ludicrous. But yeah, it's not fun. It's not engaging. It's not good at anything like that. But I did meet some guys at the top of the hill who like rolled up in a nice modified Saab. And like we were talking like car enthusiasts. They're like, is that a Plaid? And they were like drooling over this thing. I'm like, get in, let's do a launch. And so I launched it down the straightaway for them, and they like lost their minds. And from a desirability perspective, that's kind of cool. What like what people want to experience. So yeah, this car needs track mode. That would solve a lot.
Right.
It needs way better brakes, and it needs better sound insulation, I think. And also play around with that torque vectoring a little bit. The hardware is all there, no question, well, except for the braking.
It's only got dual motors, so they can't. They have to do. They have to basically do.
I know it's got two rear motors and one front.
No, it's not. It's not a tri-motor, is it?
Yeah, it is. Plaid's a tri-motor.
Okay. For some reason, I was thinking that was going to be the Plaid Plus.
Man, I would be so surprised because I'm pretty sure they say it has Plaid tri-motor. I'm pretty sure it has three motors.
Yeah, that's the tri-motor. Tri-motor.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. You'll see the comments. Actually, let's take a moment here and hear from our sponsor, and we'll come right back and talk a little bit more about this. Okay.
This week's Inside EVs podcast is brought to you by Electrify America, and we're so happy to be partnering with Electrify America until the end of the year. With Electrify America, you can drive your EV from coast to coast with more than 650 charging stations nationwide and new locations opening every week. Electrify America is bringing EV drivers the freedom they need. Whether you want to plan a weekend getaway, maybe you're off to see some friends or relatives, maybe it's a coast-to-coast road trip. You can ask our Kyle about how that's done using Electrify America charging stations. Well, you can rely on Electrify America's ultra-fast chargers to get you back on the road faster. So, where will you go charging on Electrify America? Let us know in the comments below. We'd love to hear what your plans are for this weekend, and tell us where you'll go next. And you can learn more at electrifyamerica.com.
All right, and we're back. Awesome. Yeah, so yeah, the Plaid Plus. So that was going to have like just a bigger battery, or like the 520 miles of range, and even quicker.
Yeah, but it never came to be, and we don't need to dive into that, sorry, because we're running late.
Right. Yeah.
But basically, the Plaid is the perfect car, and it is the best car in the world for some people that don't really care about driving. If you just want to go fast in a straight line, impress your friends, have awesome driver assistance for the highway, a great charging network, fantastic route planning, a comfortable car, great-looking car. Can I say the Model S is still the best-looking electric car on sale, even after launch? I think I can say that.
True. I mean, they did modify the body a little bit on this
one
too, right?
It looks so good. It's just a little bit of width, and mine had this weird wrap on it. I would get it blacked out, white seats, just like my old Model S. And man, they just look so hot on 21-inch wheels. Like, that car is so great. You can put the dogs in the back of it. No, it does not drift, but maybe we'll pull some wheel speed sensors. And
Brandon, I'm asking the important questions here. Does it drift?
Brandon, see, and
he's pretty open with us doing stuff with this car.
I personally wouldn't get a Plaid. If I was getting the Model S, I'd get the long range.
Yeah, that's the one to get.
It's as fast as you possibly need a car to be, even faster. I mean, I drove it and it was nuts. I mean, I haven't driven the Plaid. I'm sure the Plaid's even more, but it was crazy fast acceleration. And, you know, it just, for the money, that's the buy right there. You get pretty much everything in the Plaid, and it cost a lot less, and it goes like just a touch slower. You know,
when you're talking supercar levels of acceleration, so that's coming down up, but when you're coming top down, there's nothing that competes on paper with this car. Look, I'll share with our audience here. I have an order in for a Taycan right now. the price is identical to what this Plaid would cost. And it's the slowest Taycan you can get for all-wheel drive. Like, this is crazy. I'm, like, driving this thing, like, blah, I'm flying away. Like, what am I doing getting a Taycan? This thing's so good. Really is so good. So, you know, I have
to do some track serious, mode, like you said.
Some serious soul searching here because next you're year, nuts. It's a new car.
You are nuts if you change your order. Nuts, Kyle.
I know.
The Taycan is such a better vehicle.
And you got dogs. You got a new great
I
got
to fly out to Colorado and slap you around a little bit if you're thinking about doing this, because that is crazy. If I love the Model S.
Taycan, it wouldn't even be a conversation, but that's 200 plus.
You don't even need the Turbo S. You're fine. I mean, you get to drive all these ridiculously fast cars every week. It doesn't have to be your daily driver. The Taycan is so... such a more complete vehicle, in my opinion.
Yeah, well, we can battle it out. I'm going to do a whole series on choosing the car. You know, the Taycan won't come in till middle of next year, end of next year anyway. They just take forever. So, yeah, man, I would love a Rimac, but that's not possible ever. So,
right, it's only $2.5 million. You got that?
No.
Subscribe to Out of Spec Reviews.
We need a lot of subscribers for this one. Plaid's the real deal, no joke, in a straight line acceleration, and it sounds good too. You can hear the motor tuning when it really opens up, because it launches, you can't get full power because there's no way you get traction, and then you get whoop, and it just like expands, and it's real noise too.
It's not fake noise, right?
No fake noise. This is all inverter wind motors, everything's just being stretched out. It was awesome. I mean, will the car last with 1,000 launches? I don't know. I ripped the front motor out of my P100D when I had it, but you know, we'll see. That's the thing.
That's the thing I meant to mention earlier when Tom was talking about the Hummer EV. And if you watch his video, there's like the artificial sound, right? Was it really loud in the cabin?
It was, but you can turn it off. And we turned it off a few times, but they kept turning it back on. They wanted me to have the sound on, and we turned it off quite often. But it is definitely for the Watts to Freedom. They wanted it on when we did that launch. I wasn't crazy about that. I'm not in general a big fan of the artificial sound, but I will say one thing: I did the iX and i4 BMW iX and i4 first drives, and I have the iX video coming out this weekend. I actually liked the artificial sound that BMW has in the iX. I didn't like the i4. It's different sound. But I think if I had an iX, every now and then I would put it on, depending on what mood I was in driving. And it's like the first electric vehicle that I actually said, this isn't bad. Like, this actually blends in nicely with my driving, you know, and I don't need that crazy audible feedback that I thought I would, because I was always a car enthusiast, you know. After driving EVs for a while, I think it's just silly. But the iX actually has pretty good artificial sound. If you don't have it too loud, it actually does complement the drive, and that surprised me. It's the first EV that I actually liked it.
I think Hans Zimmer came up with that sound for them. I think GM had some guy in shipping come up and do the sound for Hummer EV.
Yeah. Can we talk about Dominic's favorite electric car?
It's your favorite electric car.
It's everyone's favorite electric car.
Oh, man. Yes. Let's talk about this thing. So I got to see Kyle last week, which is great.
Yeah, it was good to hang out with you.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. You know, you do this job, and we're always at home, you know. I'm like in my little office here. You can see it's like a little cubby hole. But, you know, every time, once in a while, we get to go out and do stuff and then, you know, and see people. And so we got to do that last week. And so Kyle and I were both in Irvine, California at the same time. Actually, we went on different days, but it was like a 3-day kind of thing. So we overlapped a little bit. So let's talk about this. Yes. And that headline kind of says it all, right?
It's not beautiful. I don't know why you put that in there.
I like the way it
looks.
Terrible
looking car.
I like the way. I mean, so I start off. So I wrote this first drive piece for
great first drive review. One of the best. It's the best from the Mazda thing, because I read through. I wanted to make because I was pretty opinionated. I wanted to see where everyone else fell after I posted my stuff. And your first drive review was one of the commenters on the post summed it up. It was magazine quality on a free website. It was really awesome writing, I thought.
Well, that's thank you. I had a lot of help, actually. You know, you write these things, and usually we're kind of on our own with a lot of writing. But
first drives, they take seriously.
Man, they do. I wrote like way too many words, and then they come in and like run lines through everything and make suggestions. And wow, it's really helpful. It's really great to have that. But yeah, well, thank you for those kind words. So yes, so but Mazda, man, oh man, okay, so. They got this. So I like this car. So I started the post by saying, you know, I happened to be in Tokyo for the 2019 Tokyo Motor Show, and that's when it debuted, and it had on stage spinning, and I was there with Clint actually. And if you go to the Motor One First Drive piece that I wrote, they've put that video from the debut at the very bottom of the post, and Clint just sort of introducing the vehicle, but I'm behind the camera, and that's like the most exciting part of this whole thing for me. Clint got me to hold this camera for him, and that was a big adventure for me anyway. But it looked great. I liked the way it looked, and I was really hyped about it. But then, you know, we learned about the specs and everything, and so this has already been for sale already in Europe and Japan since I think the fall of 2020. So it's been there for a little while now already. And I think we even have an owner on our forum talking about it a bit.
Well, that's all there are, one.
Right. I mean, actually I think
they're popular in Europe.
In Norway, I think because of whatever incentives they have, it comes out, you know, very affordable.
Well, that's here, where it makes sense. And it works for the Japanese market, by the way. We have to judge the car for our market. For Japan, this might be a different story, but we're American media, of course.
Right. So the numbers are in America are 100 miles. Like that's the big thing. It's a 100-mile car EPA, and it's only available in California to start. And there's this Kyle with it. It looks good. It looks especially good in red, I thought.
But I'm helping it there. Okay. Just keep that in mind. Me standing there is really improving the smiling.
Oops. Reviews video and Steve. Welcome. And
here we go. Mute. Copyright strikes coming at you.
No, oh man, you can hear that. Oh no, yeah, don't copyright strike us, please.
No, we won't.
Okay. So yeah, only available in California and 100 miles. And what's the other disappointing specs on it?
0 to 60 in a million years.
Yeah, it's 9.4 seconds, so that's the thing, you know, and it's front wheel drive. Of course, it's so underpowered though. Actually, you got it this week. In my review, I said you can't get, you know, the front wheel
in a straight line, but if you have any lock on it, just roast the inside tire, which they claim they have torque vectoring, but it doesn't really work that well. And look, I just think, do you want me to give you the quick rundown on this, on my opinions, and then I'll let you kind of build up the car a little bit? I think objectively, there is a lot to like about this car. Let's not just totally trust it. It's not a bad vehicle.
Right.
The interior is beautiful.
It is.
The front two seats, they have great seating position, I thought. The steering wheel's amazing. The gauge cluster's nice. The UI is really good. You know, I really loved the interior. This use of this cork throughout was kind of cool. Like, it was well thought out. This rear clamshell door situation was very reminiscent of the RX-8, but it, like, just put four doors on an SUV as to which it's based. Like, that was dumb. So it's based on an R. It's not based on an RX-8. That would be awesome.
Let's open some doors.
On a CX-30. And yes, these rear door situations is not doing it for me. There's no room in the back seat. The front driver's seat is power, so you have switches there, but the passenger seat isn't, which is not uncommon for Japanese vehicles to do this, but it was weird in the back. You have two different ways of exiting depending on which side you get out. And like the details on the styling were nice. I loved the taillights, but I don't like this car B pillar back. From a styling perspective, but I've never
got in the back.
Oh, are you? That's you in the video then.
Yeah. That's me in the video. Yeah. This is the back seat. It was really, so I was sitting in the front and I had the seat back where I was sitting in my normal position. I got in the back and I, you know, it's obviously there's no room,
but by the way, I tested those switches. They don't let you adjust the seat while driving. Cause I was like, that's going to be annoying.
Right.
But no, if you're driving, those switches are off.
And those switches are only behind the driver too, right? They're not behind the passenger.
Yeah, because the passenger seat's manual.
Right. Right. Even on the side, the driver's seat has all the electronic controls. All, you know, you reach down and it does all the things. It's got a lot of, I think it was eight different ways it moves. But the passenger seat does not have any of that. It does have a standard moonroof, which is kind of interesting, an interesting kind of choice.
Can we just talk about the event really quick? Because this is where I was most disappointed in Mazda. Look, they did a nice job, whatever. It was cool. But like when we got to the presentation, which you were a part of, Dominic. Yes. And you sat through twice.
Yes.
And you heard me asking them questions and you heard their responses, which was, we weren't sure about anything. We had the subject matter experts on the car, on video chat, who are R&D team, powertrain, chassis, and product management, right? So the people behind the car. So I'm like, what's the onboard charger capacity? Oh, sorry, we don't know. What's the usable battery pack capacity? We're not telling anyone. So it's 35.5 kilowatt hour gross, but we don't know how much is usable,
right.
Which is crazy. I've never had an automaker say we are not disclosing the most important fact about the car.
Right.
It's just, what did you think about how that went?
Well, so I went to both briefings and my briefing was kind of quietish, but as you're at your briefing, of course, so you asked the whole room, and this was hilarious. I'm not sure if I got the wording exactly right, but something like, are you guys excited about this car?
Well, I asked them like after we got towards the end of the presentation, everyone's like checking their phones on video conference. Like they're like got stuff going on. No one at any point said, we really put a lot of effort into this car. We stand behind this product. We can't wait for you to drive it. The only thing they kept asking us was, aren't you guys so excited to get out and drive this thing? And like everyone shook their heads no. So I asked everyone and mostly the people on the team, I said, are you guys excited about this car? Because product passion goes a long way, I think, for the car for me. If this was the same exact package, but we had someone saying, look, we really tuned this thing in this direction for this use cases, and we spent so much time, and here's the reason as to why we did X, maybe I could have learned more about it. But they were like, one guy said, yeah. And then the other guy was like, well, you know, my wife was kind of looking at one. So I was just like, what is going on here? I've never seen, like, you could tell they just didn't want to be there. So,
right. I mean, you ask a question like that. That's when you jump in. Like, I even know that I'm not a marketing guy, but I know when the customer asks if you're excited about the product that you're selling them. Yes, I am so excited about this thing.
We did not get that. That did not happen. It was, yeah.
Awkward silence.
Yeah, my wife.
There's a million ways they could have handled that. You know, even if they weren't really proud of the vehicle, like you said, they're the marketing guys. They could have said, sure, we are. You know, it's our first all electric car. Right. You know, we're you know, this is going to be a springboard for future products. And, you know, I mean, there's a million ways they could have answered that. But like, you know, when Kyle asks that question and you hear crickets and like they're looking at each other, it's like, okay, you know that they're not happy about this.
It just,
you know,
set the tone for the rest of the day for me. And they didn't know, they got kilowatt hour mixed up with kilowatts in the technical material. Anyway, here's what I did with the car. I said, y'all enjoy your press drive. I'll see you tonight. So I went and took the car and tried to get the battery down as low as possible. Plugged it into a DC fast charger, saw a whopping 34 kilowatt peak. Then ran it up Angeles Crest as hard as I could. Got about, I don't know, 8 miles before I toasted the battery, and that was out of juice. Awesome on the limit, but you can't drive it that far. It's 60% rear bias, 40% front. So when you stuff it into a corner, you get this very pendulum effect on the rear axle. I'd be really curious how this car does in the Moose test, but it makes it really fun to drive. And so you could 911 style it, basically. You just stuff it into a corner, rear end starts to come around, mat the throttle, and it pulls itself out. And like,
which
for that,
it was kind of weird for a front wheel drive. I mean, not the pulling itself out part, that's what front wheel drives do, but just coming into getting the back end, you know, happy.
It's easy to drive a front wheel drive fast because if anything spicy starts to happen, it's just wide open throttle,
right?
And it straightens the whole thing out. So, I really did enjoy this car in the canyons. That was its strong point. The problem is, good luck with that much range, getting it to a good road, then driving it, and then getting it back to the charger. It has no relevance to the ownership experience. So then you're just limited to this car in city use case. And for that, it's relatively expensive compared to competitors. The one we drove was like $1,000 less than ID4 base, which is like way better in almost every possible way.
I think I have it at $40,275 for the one in red that I drove.
But that's with destination?
That is with destination, I believe, yes.
Yeah, so it's basically the same price as ID4. Because right. ID4 is $39.9 without destination. But right. pennies. And then you get free charging with ID4 for 3 years. So there you right. go. You get $500 with this, but good luck.
And more cargo space and better turning radius. And I mean, I like the interior of this better than the ID4.
Oh, I don't. The ID4 is way more spacious, way more playful, right. better UI.
I like the
ID4 is great. And again, you get a heated seats and heated steering wheel standard, and you get right. lane centering as standard and all this stuff. So look, at the end of the day, they're only, they're only bringing 600 of these, less than 600 of these into the U.S. for the model year 2021. Right. And then, or maybe that's just the year of 2021. And then next year, I think they go to all 50 states. But at least you won't have to see these on the road for some time. And
They don't do all 50 states until 2022. Good. Or, no, 2020. Is it 2022? Whenever the range extender comes in.
This hurt me personally because I'm such a Mazda fan. I'm a Mazda owner. I've had Miatas. I love these cars. They are always the best driving cars in their category. CX-5 is one of the best small SUVs you can buy right now. The new Miata is a blast. And guess what? They just totally missed the mark. Shouldn't have brought this car to our market. And someone's asking, did I get 34 kilowatt at multiple EA stations? Yes, the one I originally showed in the video showed complimentary session, which means that it wasn't working. I went to another one, same thing. But that was after my Canyon run, and it could have toasted the battery, but it was the exact same charging power and followed the exact same ramp down curve. So it's unlikely, but still possible that the car could have charged faster. I've never seen anyone hit more than what I did, though. So Bjorn got 35 kilowatt peak, same thing I saw.
So it's 2022 and this thing peaks out at 35 kilowatts. That's like
even the Mini Cooper SE with the same size, actually a smaller battery pack. I think it's 33 kilowatt hour, can do 50 kilowatts to like 80%. And there, Tom and I drove that car from Jersey down to North Carolina, then he drove it back up. That's doable. This is not doable.
It's like the first generation of compliance cars. And, you know, someone mentioned the compliance car thing when that's a car that, you know, automakers would sell in California and CARB states for the tax, for the credits, because they get dinged if they, for all their gas guzzlers. So they have to have some electric vehicles. And so they make a bunch of, conversions of whatever they have and they sell them in California. Anyway, they call them, what do they call them? That term
compliance
again.
Cars,
compliance cars, right? So, yeah, Mazda said this is not a compliance car.
Not a compliance car, but then it's got the same selling it in California.
Yeah. It's like the BMW i3 when it first came out, under 100 miles of range, except that it doesn't have any performance either. They were talking a lot about the dynamics of the car.
Straight line acceleration, I thought was fine. Like you just live it wide open throttle the whole time. It's slow.
You have to really slam your foot into it.
Terrible. Noise coming from the dashboard from I think a little 1930s tiny speaker they put under there. It sounds like a mouse running on a wheel faster to give you an impression of what's going on. But that was terrible.
They've got artificial sound and you can't turn it off either. And it's louder than just a little bit louder than the ID4 all-wheel drive. That was a natural whine.
Yeah. Look, Mazda knows that they were going to get bad press coverage on this car because everyone there said the same thing, but why even host a press drive? Why not just say we're releasing it and no one comes? They spent all this money.
A lot of money.
Yeah. Just don't have anyone drive it. It's the best thing for them would be for no one to drive this car.
Right. I mean, they have to let people at least know it's out there somehow, but I guess they could have done that with advertising.
They could just spend the same money on marketing. Do TikTok marketing. If you're going after pricing, the only way this car makes sense is on a lease in California. It's not a bad commuter. It's not bad to just cruise around it. The problem is the price. But if the lease is $99 a month, they were doing 500 E's for, then now extra car, who cares? You plug it in at home. By the way, you can set the AC and DC charging limits in 10% increments starting at 10%. So you can have this car never charge past 10%, which is hilarious. So if you have a friend you don't like, you can just see, and it's nine menus deep. You just set everything down to 10%. They'll never figure it out.
That's awesome. Or if you have kids. Also, in the presentation, they were saying how this car is for a young couple. They're commuting in the city. They have a they can plug it in every day. But you know, and they're talking about the dynamics, you know, the Jinbai tight that they, you know, they,
that's like a bunch of BS on this car.
Right. It's like the oneness of the horse with the rider, Japanese expression. And they were pronouncing that all wrong. They were saying like Jinbai tai or something. And I couldn't figure out what they were talking about. So I, once I got home, I asked Motoko and she's like, Jinbai tai. Okay. Because you have two T's, there's a small space between the two T's. Anyway, yeah, but so you got all that, you know, they've worked, they've put into suspension, the handling, the you know, the Jinbai tai, whatever, but it doesn't have enough spike. You know, you'll never experience that, you know, because
it
doesn't.
It's not a performance car.
Right.
And they were like, inspire that kind of driving. Torque vectoring and it does all this stuff, but I can really, here I am going wide open throttle and you can just see it's pretty lazy, but that's okay. I'm okay with a slow car. My smart car, I think, slower on paper. Okay. Then this thing is fine.
Right.
It's just the overall character of the car, the way that it was presented, the way the use case of it is just not good for our market. And I think that sums it up well. And look, at the end of the day, you guys know that we are as transparent and honest as possible. And look, I gave the car a really harsh title in my video. I said, this is the worst EV of the year. And it's objectively and subjectively the worst EV of the year. It's not wrong. And right. Look, at the end of the day, maybe Mazda won't be happy. I don't care. I'm here to provide the most honest feedback from my impressions to our audience. And that's right. Why there's multiple journalists always, because we all feel differently. Although in this case, I think we all agree it's a bunch of garbage.
Right. So I think Mazda's... Go ahead, John.
I was going to say, you know, as far as the range goes, I think there is room for 100-mile EVs,
sure,
even today. You know, and they work for a lot of people. The problem is the price. And I know this was brought up before, a $35,000 starting MSRP. It's just, it competes with cars that are so much better. It's just not worth getting. If Mazda were able to bring this to market at like 27 or 28,000, and then with the federal tax credit, it's a $20,000 car. Now it makes sense as low cost transportation, but it's just overpriced. And it, as Kyle mentioned before, this goes head to head with the ID4. It's basically the same price. And it just, I mean, the ID4 tears this thing apart in every measurable way. You know, the Volkswagen salespeople should be standing outside. You know, if anybody's at a park on a Mazda lot looking at one of these, they should just hand them their card and be like, just come over to my place and I'll show you what 38,000 will get you in an electric vehicle.
Or,
but that to say, you know, I don't mean to kill it for its performance, its price, its performance, its battery size, its range, its even its DC fast charging capabilities, which is terrible, but for a lot of people, that doesn't matter. They don't need it to DC fast charge quickly,
right,
because they're just not going to go out of their comfort zone with the vehicle. So I don't want to make it sound like we all are against short range, slow charging EVs. I don't think that's the case. It's just
I drive one every day and I love it more than anything.
Same.
We're just against this short range, slow charging EV because
we are the group of the pricing. Against MX30. We will play together.
So why would you buy this when you can get a Mini Cooper SE cheaper, right?
Yeah, the Cooper SE has so much more personality, is actually fun to drive, is actually premium on the inside,
right,
and like premium. It's a really good car. And by the way, when you roll up in a Mini, you could be a 16-year-old who just got their license. You could be like a businessman who like runs a company and it's pretty cool. Or you could be my grandma and everyone looks good getting out of a Mini. This Mazda's like, what in the world are you doing getting out of that thing?
I did pull off at one point to take some pictures over up against the ocean. I didn't, none of them turned out, but the lady at the parking booth, whatever, is like, oh, that's nice. What kind of car is that? So, it, you know, some people like it.
No, that's good. I'm sure there's one or two people. Hopefully there's 600 of them because that's how many they have to sell.
I mean, I think the main Mazda really designed this for the range extended version. I mean, they don't have any intention of selling a lot of full BEVs with this, you know,
right,
I mean,
but that like defeats. So the whole thing about the small battery they were saying is like, so we intentionally put a small battery in this because it wouldn't be heavy and it will handle better. And who wants to carry all that extra? You don't want to lug all that extra range extending with you when you don't never need it. You only drive 30 miles a day, but that's what they're doing with the range extender. They're throwing a bunch of weight and cost
Well, what else are they going to say at this point, Tom? What do you want them to say about why is there a small battery in short range? You know, they had to say that.
Yeah, but they said if we put a bigger battery in there, the car would be too slow to work.
Right. But
and I'm like, oh, so that's why the Plaid was so slow then, because it had a 100 kilowatt hour pack.
Yeah. Right, exactly.
They should hop in the Hummer EV and do the Watts to Freedom 215 kilowatt hour battery pack. The thing takes off like a jet fighter off an aircraft carrier.
So I just feel like, so the, you know, Mazda, the head honchos or whatever, came up to the engineers and said, okay, we need an electric car. You gotta build it with a frame that we already have, and you have to buy components for off the shelf because we're not going to make anything. So here's some motors from Hitachi, batteries from Panasonic, and have at it.
Yeah, what a disaster of a car, seriously. I mean, objectively a disaster of a car.
Right. As far as the numbers are concerned.
Lease, you know, has to be under $100 a month for it to make sense.
Right. That would be great. I would be tempted, it would go
instantly from the worst car to everyone should get one.
Right. I mean, value is everything, right? So, right. Your price has to match the performance that you're offering, like the range and whatever. The acceleration sometimes in the case of like the Plaid. Yeah. So, are we done ripping on the Mazda?
Yeah, great interior.
Yes. Yes, I did like the interior. And I did beat like everybody off at the stoplight. And when we got to a stoplight, the light turned green. I beat everybody every time. But,
yeah, but as you nobody said else in was your trying. Article, they didn't know they were racing. Right. But it's still a win. That counts.
Right. And I didn't get it on the Canyon Roads like Kyle did. The Canyon Roads they sent me on, I had to go back. It's a bit of a story. But it was just like a highway with like some slight curves. It wasn't like, yeah, you
convinced me to not go on their route and say, I'll see you guys tonight.
Right. Yeah. I did get to pull a U-turn though. And that was, you know, it was like, I got to feel a little bit of what was going on with everything, you know, the chassis, and it actually whipped around really nicely. It was like, oh, well, that was kind of cool actually. Cause I know some cars, U-turns a little bit fussy, you know, you're fighting the wheel and things. This rotated around there really nicely. Yes. Okay. So was there anything other news? Just to jump back to the whole Tesla thing. We didn't mention also that they delivered a record shattering 241,300 cars in Q3 of 2021, which is kind of mind blowing. And yeah. And also they've raised their prices again on Model 3 and Model Y, and they're very expensive. So that value equation is kind of, I don't know, understand how
I think now is not the right time to buy a Tesla, new or used. No. But my right. Tesla, if you want to buy it, you can, but it's not officially for sale. We both probably just keep it.
I mean, the Tesla, they're extending their delivery times too. So you're going to have to wait a while to get one if you want one as well. So
yeah, if you have a Tesla, now's the time to sell it and then buy another one in a year. My mom made $6,000 on her Model Y and like $4,000 on her Model 3, buying brand new cars and driving them.
All right. Hey, before we go, I did want to talk about something else. So if I can just twiddle the right buttons here. Oh, I can't play that. I can play that actually. I can't play the sound though. So this is where we miss Martin. At the beginning, I was saying that Martin's not here because he does all the screen sharing and things like that. So that's kind of my job today. And here we go. So Kyle, you like this thing, right? This is the...
So I know nothing about it. Walk me through the highlights. What is it?
Okay. So maybe you can help me with the pronunciation. Piech?
No, I think it's like Piech or something like this.
Piech. Oh, that makes sense. Piech GT. So this is part of the Porsche family heritage tradition. I believe he started Porsche, the original Piech. So this is a custom car coming out. And is it the grandson of the Porsche designer? There's a family connection there.
Great totally grandson. Don't know what it is, Ferdinand though. Porsche.
Okay, thank you. And right. So they were going to build this car, and it's a electric Grand Tourer, they say, for 2024. 500 kilometers or 310 miles of WLTP range. Let's get to the good part. 603 horsepower with three motors, three 150 kilowatt motors, two on the back axle, of course, and one on the front. 0 to 60 in under 3 seconds, and to 124 miles an hour in under 9 seconds. And they don't talk about the top speed. The battery is a weird thing, though. I don't know, Kyle, if you want to hear this, if this is
Yeah, that's what I'm waiting for. Tell me about the pack.
So this is kind of bizarre. 75 kilowatt hours lithium pack. And they say that it can charge to 80% in 8 minutes.
Huh. Sign me up.
That sounds like, does that sound too good to be true?
No.
Wait, there's
if
more.
You're only charging it once in a while, just max that thing out. I mean, okay. You just have to do with lithium plating at that point. But like, if it can handle it, sure, go right ahead.
It says that through the use of a special charger created by its Chinese partners from Qingdao T-Good, it'll do it in 5 minutes.
Cool. Well, which, I've never experienced anything like that.
0 to 60 in 5 minutes.
But they did have a picture of it at the charging station in Munich, the ENBW, where we shot all of our charging tests.
Okay.
So if you scroll down in the article a little bit. Also, the car looks like snappy. I'm not sure who's driving it, but they're not doing a great job. Let's see. Yeah, keep going through.
So amongst these photos here, maybe?
Yeah, not seeing it on the bottom, though. Anyway, there was a photo, I think it was on Twitter or something like this, where it was posted at the EMBV charging park in Munich. And yeah, I was like, oh, that's where we spent so much time. Wish we were there when it rolled up, because we were there like every day for hours a day. This thing looks the business. It's awesome. The biggest question is, will it have a soul? Will it have an emotional connection to drive? And I think, someone says it's an air-cooled battery pack. Oh, that's, I don't know. Is that true? That's crazy. I don't know how that would be possible to charge without liquid cooling. Anyway, it's just a concept, but it's a concept that I'm really into. Will it ever make production? I don't know, but it's pretty cool.
Right.
Definitely looks like an old 280Z. And I know somebody commented that, but that's what I was thinking about when I first saw it.
Fastback approach here.
Yeah.
Handling thing, like whatever they were doing in that shot, and then they spin it over here, makes it look like they have some chassis tuning work to do, or their chassis guys need to go to driving school.
Right. Yeah, there's some questionable spinning out in that video. I'm not really sold on the looks of it. It's like,
really?
It's got like some elements.
It looks so good to me.
It's got some elements of like British kind of things going on with like their old Jaguars.
Jaguar F-Type.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's any
E-types. Yeah, I'm not
looking thing.
I'm not really a fan.
A lot of Aston in there. A lot of old Ferrari in there. Like, this is just the classic sports car shape. Long hood, short tail. You sit right on the rear wheels. You feel every little inch of degree happening on the back axle. It's exactly what you want. And the big question is, would this be better with a 12-cylinder, naturally aspirated, screaming exhaust? My gut feeling tells me yes. So that's the downside for these enthusiast EVs. I've yet to drive one that really encourages or encapsulates the soul and enthusiasm of driving that I love so much.
Simon Matthews says, British is good. I think talking about styling, and he's wrong, but... All right. So I'm not sure. I think, is that everything we want to talk about today?
I think we've hit our time limit.
Oh, wow. Okay. So that brings us to the end of our show. If you have any questions or comments, you can leave them on the Inside EVs forum podcast thread or on our YouTube or Twitch comment sections. If you like the show, please give us a thumbs up. And if you're watching on YouTube, if you're watching on YouTube, or a rating if you're listening on another platform. Don't forget, you can find and follow our panelists on Twitter. You can find Tom Logney at Tomalog with 2 M's. Kyle is at It's Kyle Connor. And I'm at Dominic_Y. Thanks a lot for watching, and we'll see you all again next week. Ciao.